From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In 1980, two UC Davis students were abducted days before Christmas. The bodies of John Riggins and Sabrina Gonzalez, both 18 years old, were found 2 days later in Sacramento County. Known as the Sweetheart Murders, justice for their deaths took decades. Richard Hirschfield was eventually convicted and received the death penalty in 2013, more than 30 years after the murders. And this week, Hirschfield passed away in prison. He was 75 years old. We're going to take a look back at this case and a conviction that was far from guaranteed. A key piece is advances in DNA technology, as well as the tenacity of those devoted to solving cold cases. Anne-Marie Schubert is the former Sacramento County District Attorney and was devoted to solving the Sweetheart murders. She joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
So you were a prosecutor for more than 30 years. Of course, that includes being Sacramento County's district attorney. But you have become an expert in DNA evidence and cold cases, especially after the Golden State Killer, locally known as the East Area Rapist. When did this expertise begin for you?
It started in much younger days in the mid-90s. I was a prosecutor in Solano County, so over in Fairfield and Vacaville area. And I was in the rape unit, and I was assigned a case in around 1995 that involved a kidnapping of a teenage kid and sexually assaulted. And so that was my very first DNA case. I realized then, I'm not a science person, but I realized that this is the greatest tool ever given to law enforcement to find the truth. So I kind of developed this, really this passion behind it. And then when I came to Sacramento in 1996, and was fairly quickly, I would say, assigned a number of DNA cases. So that's kind of the genesis of all of it.
What struck you about the Sweetheart Murders cold case?
Well, obviously, the fact that these were two innocent young kids that were freshmen in college. I grew up in Sacramento, so it was almost like the East Area Rapist. Everybody knew about it. So one of the things that I had done when I was still a deputy DA in Sacramento before I was elected is I went to Jan Scully and I asked her, can we start a cold case unit and can we try to solve the East Area Rapist amongst other cases? And so in the Riggins Gonzalez case was obviously on the list. And so that kind of that was around 2001 or so. So quite a while ago, but obviously I was interested in that case because of the magnitude on the families, on the community, and the horrific nature of the crimes.
So you started this cold case unit in 2001. The case remained unsolved until 2002, when there was a DNA match made to Richard Hirschfield. So that seemed like a game changer for a cold case for these murders that happened in 1980.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the history of DNA, I mean, it really kind of came out, started being used in courtrooms in the mid-90s. And so that's why, you know, I was fortunate enough to be kind of on the ground floor of the cold case unit. And we had basically gone through and looked at all the cases, whether it was SAC PD, SAC Sheriff, other agencies. And so, once DNA became kind of this forensic tool and the power of that tool, particularly with solving crime through what we call a DNA database hit, it was a game changer, no question about that.
At one point, decades prior to this, prosecutors got close to convicting other people. What went wrong?
Well, they had the wrong people, quite honestly. So if for the listeners, this case involved really two counties. It involved Yolo County because they were kidnapped from Davis and their bodies were found in Sacramento. So either county could prosecute. Early on in the mid-90s, I believe it was, Yolo County believed their working theory was always that the killers were related to Gerald Gallego. And Gerald Gallego was a serial killer out of Sacramento. Him and his wife had gone around and kidnapped people, did horrible things. And so the theory at the time was, well, this group of four guys who had, you know, they had their challenges, they had their own records, had committed this crime to help Gallego get out and do a copycat killing. So when I first read it, I was struck by the theory. But once I started the cold case unit, I went to our homicide supervisor. I said, hey, can we try to work on this case? And he gave us the blessing. And then Yolo County gave us the blessing. And so we were able to go over there and take some of the evidence back. And quite honestly, The solving of the case really didn't have anything to do with me or the unit. It had to do with the fact that the detectives had put that DNA that exonerated those four people. I mean, let's thank God, you know, somebody found this blanket and tested it, because four people who were not guilty were facing the death penalty. And so that excluded those four people. And the detective then put that into the DNA data bank, which is a databank of convicted offenders that can match up to crime scenes. And that was just, I don't know if you call it fortuitous or serendipity or whatever it was, but it wasn't long after we started that cold case unit. And then once it was, quote, solved and the arrest occurred, then it was assigned to this phenomenal prosecutor by the name of Dawn Blade. And she had that case for many, many years, all the way through the verdict.
Well, in addition to investigators and prosecutors like yourself, there was also a journalist who was devoted to solving this cold case. His name was Joel Davis. He wrote a book on the Sweetheart murders as well. I believe also had a personal connection. Did you ever meet or talk with him during this time?
I did. Actually, when we first started the cold case unit, I remember maybe it was a SACB. Somebody ran a story about the fact that we were looking at old cases. And I get this kind of cold call from Joel out of the blue. I didn't know him. And he asked me to look at it. And I said, well, you know, because you're a journalist, it's probably not the most appropriate. If the family wants to call me, then please have them do that. And so the Riggins called me, Kate Riggins called me. And that's kind of when we started re-looking at it. Then we went and got the evidence and kind of went from there.
Why do you think this pair was targeted? It seems rare that they were together as a pair. At UC Davis.
They were at a very safe place. I mean, Sacramento in 1980 was also a very safe place. But, you know, Richard Hirschfeld was a horrible, horrible monster. His prior, he was caught because he was in prison for a child molest involving, I think, two kids up in Washington. He'd had a prior right before the UC Davis kids were killed. He had committed a horrific rape. And so he was just a monster. And I mean, to some extent, he's not unlike Joseph DeAngelo, because DeAngelo targeted multiples at a time as well and killed two people at a time oftentimes. So he's just a sadistic serial killer is what he was.
Given that they were abducted in Yolo County, but their bodies were found in Sacramento County, I believe in what would be Folsom today, do you have a better idea? Or can you explain why that location was chosen?
Well, you know, when the quote hit came in, meaning once we were notified that Richard Hirschfeld's DNA matched the DNA from the blanket that was in the van of the victims, I remember immediately thinking, oh, my goodness, we've got to figure out what's the connection. Why this area? And I went out actually by myself to Aerojet, which is where they house the prison files. And I remember reading Richard Hirschfeld's prison file and thinking to myself, trying to figure out what's the connection to that location, and ultimately realized that I believe his brother, Joseph, had lived not far from that area. And so that was always the thought, okay, that makes it more sense that it wasn't just, you know, a random spot. And that kind of led ultimately to law enforcement also investigating the brother, Joseph, as well.
Was he involved?
Well, what ended up happening was the sheriff's office, the two homicide detectives flew up to, I think he was living in Washington or maybe Oregon. I'm not positive which one, but they went to his house. I believe it was basically unannounced, and they were going there to get a DNA sample from, this is Joseph, not Richard. And they went unannounced. They talked to him and got a DNA sample. And I think it was that night he killed himself, and he left a note. Which became a big piece of evidence for Dawn Blade in terms of her trial strategy. But basically in the note, he said, I was there. Richard did it. I've lived with this, something to the effect of, I've lived with this my whole life. And then he killed himself. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty dramatic. Obviously, I don't think he had any record, but obviously he was present at a minimum when his brother killed these two young kids.
Given that this DNA match happened in 2002, but his conviction and his sentencing was more than a decade later, Richard Hirschfeld was convicted in 2013. Can you help us understand what took so long?
There's no question it did take a long time. I mean, you know, my experience when I was doing homicides was 2 to 4 years or so sometimes. You know, there's a couple things on this. One, as I mentioned, the prosecutor was phenomenal, but there was also, you know, the defense attorney is a woman named Linda Prisu, very good lawyer in Sacramento. But there's very few lawyers in the county that can do death penalty types of cases. You have to have certain standards. You have to meet certain standards. Linda is one of them, Linda Parisi. And so there was that because of, you know, basically limited number of people. But there was also just the fact that this was a monstrous case that had a prior prosecution involving four other people. And so all of that stuff had to be factored in because the defense is entitled to that information. And I just think that it just because of those types of things, it took a long time, obviously a very long time to get to trial.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with former Sacramento County District Attorney Anne Marie Schubert about the Sweetheart murders. You mentioned Joseph DeAngelo and that these murders were during the time of the East Area Rapist, who would later become known as the Golden State Killer. DNA, of course, also solved this cold case. But can you explain how the use of DNA has evolved since you started using this in trials and became aware of this?
Sure. So, I mean, it's evolved in a lot of ways. Probably one of the most significant is like my very first DNA case, you had to have about the size of about a quarter to be able to get an actual DNA profile for testing. Like if I sent it to the lab, you had to have a fair amount. Over the years, because of advancements, you can, I mean, I remember defense attorneys or myself holding up like a Sweet and Low packet, 1/1,000,000,000th of a Sweet and Low packet. If you took a 1/1,000,000,000th of that, you can now get a DNA profile. And so you think about, and we've evolved to this point that you need a very, very small amount where if I just touch a glass and I leave a little bit of DNA behind. So that's one part is, you know, the amount that you need is much, much less. It's much more efficient. But there's also this advancement of how we solve cases with DNA. So, you know, Riggins-Gonzalez was solved because of the California DNA databank or the U.S. DNA databank, where we matched his DNA because he was in prison in Washington to the crime scene sample. And then with the East Area Rapist, we've evolved to this point where now we're using public genealogy sites to find relatives of whether it's a bad guy or whether it's a missing person or unidentified remains. So it really is. I mean, I've had the pleasure and the honor of kind of watching this evolution. And it's truly extraordinary in our ability to fight crime.
Mm. How did you find out about Hirschfield's death this week?
I actually got a call, a voicemail from Kate Riggins, John Riggins' mom. And then I heard it from the prosecutor as well.
How are their families doing? It's been 44 years since these murders happened.
I didn't talk to the Gonzalez family. I know perhaps Don Blade might have. I talked to Mrs. Riggins. I think, you know, I don't want to speak for them and their emotions, but my suspicion would be that there's a sense of relief that, you know, it's been a long time. The Riggins are older, but having some sense of, quote, closure perhaps brings a little bit of peace. Did he deserve the death penalty? Absolutely deserved it. Would he ever have gotten it? Probably not because of the state of California and the moratorium. But this is a finality that hopefully going into the holiday season for these families, they have some level of relief, I suppose. Hmm.
Finally, where do you see DNA technology going when it comes to solving cold cases? Because it's evolved a great deal since you first became aware of it 30 years ago.
I think it's going to be the biggest seismic shift, as one of the Golden State Killer victims had said, in terms of crime fighting, and not just crime fighting, but crime prevention, because the sooner we stop somebody from committing crime, the sooner we prevent that future crime. And so I think all we're going to continue to see is this increased level. If you have DNA on a case, we're going to get to the point where we can solve 90, 95% of crimes because of the advancements. So it's really exciting. I'm very proud to still be in that field, but it's also about resources. So we've got to be willing to fund it and educate folks about it and use it in a fair and balanced manner.
Anne Marie, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Anne Marie Schubert is the former Sacramento County District Attorney, and we were talking about the Sweetheart murders. Up next, we're going to get a temperature check on the small business climate. We'll have a couple of different businesses and learn about the strides and challenges that they face this year. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.